Namaste and in lock catch, and welcome to this episode of One World, the New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and this week's guest, we have Anthony Hall. He is also known as Grandpa Stork, as he has the House of Flying Dragons pop-up play-based learning and game development space. So what they're trying to do is put education in children's hands and technology use as a game so that we can learn it and develop it and use it effectively. Now, he talks about fitness, cybersecurity, space industry, sports technology, and game-based learning. He's a founder and chief storyteller of the Rose of Education organization. He's a senior advisor for Space Development Nexus, which is a collaborative platform where they invite students, technopreneurs, and researchers to build an educational network and entrepreneurial pipeline. Quite interesting. He's also a training coordinator for the Holistic Information Security Practitioner Institute, hence the HISP behind his name. Anthony, glad to have you here, man. This is going to be a wonderful chat. We've already had an opportunity to get to know each other a little bit, and I think this is going to be fun.
Zen Namaskar. It's so great to be here. Thank you for inviting me to Grandpa to chat with you and your audience. And so, yeah, you know, a lot, you know, man, think about the years that have gone by and how much things have changed in our lifetimes and where things are going.
Absolutely.
And it's the right time for these type of rap sessions, these kind of
apocalypse. Cool. So yeah. Let's start with let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine. We'll leave Sherman and Peabody behind for now. And those folks younger than us are probably not going to understand where that came from. That was part of the Bullwinkle show years ago. Wow, watch me pull a rabbit out of this hat.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So
when we're younger, and when you were younger, you know, obviously in the development of where you're at and what you're involved in, the people you're serving, and your goals, your mission, vision for life in the future, this had to have started fairly young with some kind of internal connection or awakening awareness that you had. When did you first notice that, and what was life like, and how did you find yourself fitting in that?
You know, that's a great question. So, and thank you for that. And thinking about, you know, how these things start and what are my earliest inklings or connections, I guess I'd have to say, you know, growing up, my mother's an artist, a singer. I watched her create art. And, you know, when she was 7 months pregnant with me, you know, she had recorded a doo-wop album. And so I think I posted that.
Well, you had studio time before you even born, huh?
Before that, yeah. And so, but growing up in an environment where you're watching art created, and I remember one of my earliest memories is my mother singing. I think I'm in the basket or crib or something by her in the kitchen, and she's washing dishes, and she's just maybe talking to me or saying a sentence, but she's going up and down the musical scale as she's talking to me and singing at this, and, you know, but she's doing a sentence. And that, for somebody, that memory has always stuck with me. But I also see how it informed me, because one of the things our parents always encouraged was, you know, education, reading. I mean, as much as I love playing football, you know, said, you're not going to play football or any sports unless you keep your grades up.
I have an education.
Yeah.
What are you going to fall back on afterwards, right?
Yeah, they would like to say, we're not going to have you being some big, dumb football player. And so, I mean, for years, I would think back, oh, my parents didn't allow me to play sports, when the really truth was, it was in my hands. I didn't keep my grades up. Also, that, you know, I could have done that. And so as much as I used to look back and think that, you know, things were taken from me, I recognized that those were in my hands. It was a gift that I had to give myself if I'd only been aware and paid attention.
Right. The choices are always our own.
It is. Yeah. And I thank my parents for helping us to take responsibility for our choices. You know, it was about accountability.
That's always a tough one, isn't it?
It's like, you want to make adult decisions. Well, then you need to be able to take the consequences at like an adult, you know, take it like a man, my dad would say. But also in an environment that encouraged us to explore, and reading was one of my, you know, escapes, and love how language could transport you.
A good book can take you into another world and you get absorbed in it. You don't even realize it.
I mean, I was learning words and seeing phrases and seeing how, you know, I mean, you know, I, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is famous for playing, you know, come on stage and playing Conan the Barbarian. But the author of Conan the Barbarian, Robert E. Howard, you know, he wrote these in the 30s, and you read the novels and they're literature. And yeah. So the way he would transport, the language he would use to describe the events and places and the atmosphere, it was not like any language I had heard. And so, it compelled me to read and enjoy and to learn and to see the power of words and to adopt that as what, you know, I want to be able to do that and find my own way to play, you know. Really, I saw it as a game. You know, learning words, but learning, you know, the play of words, playing on words, but the effect that these words had on myself,
right,
and on others, and that power. And so
I would offer, let me ask you this. Did you find it a chore or fun?
Fun.
Absolutely. Okay, that's what I was hoping for. And this is, you know, something that we often forget. Education ought to be fun. And when we are engaged, it is. Even if we're doing, as we grow up, having the education, going into the work field, as long as we're enjoying what we're doing, and, you know, that gives us the opportunity to have fun with it, even if it's something that we may not necessarily like to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wasn't too engaged with the way we were being taught in class now. You know, Grandpa was the kind that, you know, I'm out looking out the windows while the teacher is talking. So I wasn't really engaged with that. But if you could have had class outside on the football pitch or down in the creek or up in a tree or something, that now you'd have my attention and talk to me about the physics of football and trajectory and inertia and closing speed and breaking it down. It's like, oh, now you got me. Okay. Now right. I see how this fits in my world, and that these things that, you know, I know innately, or that players or people, you know, that, you know, be kinesthetic learners like myself. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're taught not in abstracts most of the time, and there's no visceral experience of the learning.
Right. And so games for me were always a way for me to kind of relate, make sense, to really figure, you know, to figure how things work. I mean, I'm a builder. I love to build things, love to see how things work, and whether it be building a deck or building an acronymic programming language, an AI. So, like, I like to understand how things work. And so my love of games, the love of language and education, you know, had always been there, but they really didn't crystallize and come together until 19 years ago.
And yet you still had the curiosity, right? And I don't know, you know, you mentioned you want to know how things work. Right. And you want to build things. And so there's this unspoken curiosity that we have that we often don't recognize. We're just driven to do and explore and figure out how to break stuff.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know,
and build it as well. Right.
Because, you know, because I was getting ready to pass by, you know, an important part of that aspect, how it has carried on through my life, my curiosity and how it's an imagination and how it has served me. You know, I first got into the IT field, you know, by accident, 1992, you know, so I'm working for Manpower, you know, and they sent me on this temporary assignment to answer the phones for this notebook laptop computer company, you know, so I'm there, Grandpa's there, you know, I'm answering the phones and transferring to the sales department, to the IT department, so forth and so on. And so during that time, you know, I'm sending those questions along, but then I'm also following up. I'm saying, okay, why is that, you know, what does that mean? Or how are you guys doing? I'm sticking my nose, I had my nose out in everybody's business because I want to see how this thing worked.
Right.
And during that process, you know, so a week into that, you know, so a week goes by and I'm there and people are calling in and I'm just handling them myself. Oh yeah, this handles, you know, you're having this problem. Well, okay, you got to check your BIOS, blah, blah, blah. Oh yeah, this, oh, you know, this. I mean, I was answering all their questions. I didn't have to pass them on. And so the folks that, you know,
got some attention, didn't it?
Yeah, they hired me after that week and full time into the sales department, and grandpa hasn't looked back since. You know, Silicon Valley became, you know, my playground. I got paid to learn, but, you know, I mean, I didn't go to university or study computer science in school, but what really helped me make that connection was that, you know, my first part of my early career, working career is in the construction trades, you know, building fences, decks, houses, and, you know, planting trees, you know, and the thing that got me when I'm checking out these guys, they're putting the laptop computer together, you know, okay, here's the floppy drive, and I go, when they still had floppy drives, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, the keypad and all this stuff. And it's like, that's not much different from when we're building a house and designing the house and putting those things together. So it was those dots connected, and that relationship was made for me that the light bulb clicked. So I get this. Okay, it's no mystery about this.
Well, it isn't pretty much everything process and logistics.
Yeah, right. But, you know, when you grow up, you don't learn that. You know, we're not learning that.
No, you have to be inside of it in order to get even the beginning awareness of it. And when you're curious, it's like you step back a little bit while you're inside of it and go, okay, how's this all working together and how, you know, coming together, and what are the components in it, both human and material? And then how does that all come together in a synergy so that you end up with something that is a value and that those who make it are valued?
And absolutely. And so, but it also helped me find my place in this area where that I'm just a new kid on the block and having to learn the language, you know, so it became a little language of understanding RAM and ROM and, you know, write once, read many media. I mean, it was a fantastic education, which I got paid for quite well, and which is great, you know. And so, and that curiosity then led me to explore all areas, you know, in the hardware development and hardware and software development, you know. And so I worked primarily in this, you know, business development and sales. And so I think the most transforming experience that I had were are the people who embraced me, you know, because most of the time I was the only, you know, person of color, you know, in the organizations. And
let's pause on that for a minute, because this is a really inner place that you have to adjust in. So this goes back inside. You know, we were talking before this conversation, we were talking about how we live half inside and half outside, and we're seeking to balance that because it's seeking to be balanced. Right. So what were the things that you went through personally, that your thoughts, your feelings that you had to work through in order to get by the bias from both sides?
Right. Well, you know, I have to thank our parents for that. You know, they prepared us to stand on our own two feet, to be able to look a person in the eye, have a firm handshake, and have confidence in our own identity and who we were, that are, you know, that, you know, we're not defined by the 400 years of slavery, you know, I mean, that's just a blip on, you know, on the historical record. And so that here's our legacy. And so they instilled that in us, and that, you know, that, but also that we're responsible to be, you know, productive citizens, law abiding citizens, and to be, and to contribute, you know, to, that we can't go through life thinking that, life does not owe you. You said you owe it. Life does not owe you. Yep, she was saying, and that we owe a contribution to you know, society as a whole and as people as a whole, especially growing up during, you know, the 60s, you know, 1968, you know, Grandpa was 9 years old. And so the things that were going on during that time and how I watched how our parents responded to that, you know, they didn't go quietly into this good night, but they said, okay, these voices have been silenced, you know, JFK, MLK, you know, that they were, you know, were gone, but they saw that they could take a place and become a voice in during that time to help, you know, educate a new breed of Black folks about mm-hmm. our legacy. And so one of the things they did, so in 1969, 1970, you know, so after 1968 and everything that was going on, our parents formed an organization called the African Afro-American Cultural Exhibit Association. And so what they would do then, they start out locally putting on Black history exhibits. You know, and my mother's an artist and they were connected with local business people, you know, ones, you know, that, you know, one had a import export, African import export shop in Oakland and other business owners. And they all came and collaborated. And they did this through having rap sex, like we're doing. But a bunch of them come together, having some drinks, listening to Richard Pryor or Red Fox or something, but talking right. about what can we do
right.
to be a part of this. And so, you know, that and so that effort that they led then ended up them being invited to take up one of the exhibit halls at the California State Fair, Cal Expo. So in 1970, you know, there's four exhibit halls. So they're the center, in the quad, center quad. And so we had one of those exhibit halls to put on the first and largest of its kind Black history exhibit.
All right. Oh, that's just awesome. Now, I want to bring attention to the notion that they acknowledged the past, right? But they did one critical thing. They didn't drag it with them, right? We're usually so caught up in either past hurts, perceived or otherwise, belief systems, mm-hmm. or future fears of something. And so that takes us out of being able to be really present, see what needs to be done, and step in and do it, which is what your parents did and others like them, right? But those were rare people.
Yes.
Now, how do we bring that kind of attitude forward to today, right? When we sorely need it on a global basis of people stepping up, doing the right stuff, showing that, yeah, that this is, dare I say, how we can love one another and share this space we call Earth cooperatively, collaboratively, consciously.
Right? And it's happening, and that's the thing, and it's happening. So, you know, meeting people like you and others who are leading an effort to, and to say, you know, how can we be a part of bringing about the change? I mean,
I'm just asking questions, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly. And so it's those questions.
Uh-huh.
You know, my thought always been, you know, what's the, you know, what was really the problem in the beginning? I think, you know, the real problem was that someone questioned authority, you know, that a question was raised and it's like, wait a minute, we're not supposed to question. And so, but questions are where that lead us to insights and
curiosity.
And especially questions that lead us inside. And so we don't have enough, but what I think, I don't see enough that we have enough curiosity about who we are inside. You know, we're afraid of discovering who we are inside because there's so much hurt and so much trauma attached, and we're so triggered by everything around us that reminds us.
We're afraid we may not like ourselves, right?
You know, and so, but and that's where our liberation is. That's what we really, you know, we're looking for freedom. You know, we're looking, you know, for things outside of ourselves when the real journey, you know, is forward, is really inside.
Absolutely. And starting, you know, with the oldest text that we're aware of, the Vedas, you know, up into today, all of the, for lack of a better, masters, you know, they don't even like to be called that most people call them that, because they've gone that path. They've found what's inside and they've turned around and say, hey, come look, right? And inviting others to do the same, because it's not something we can prescribe or project upon others. We can only invite.
And, you know, you saying that just reminds me of, you know, a biblical scripture said that the kingdom of God is within you, you know, that, and that, okay, what does that mean? And so what does that really mean to us individually, or even that idea that we can embody love and compassion, that, and have those same, have the same things for ourselves. And so,
right. Now, having experienced that, as we both have in our ways, there's a similar, or at least I posit now, because of the experience I had as a teen of having a near-death experience, ended up in light and on the other side, getting my mission for life, coming back and understanding that we're all cosmic consciousness condensed into form. What I retained from that was this, the sense of unconditional love, having a sense, right? It was a high-pitched, effervescent, iridescent sensation. And although we don't necessarily take the time to articulate how it really feels when you're in that place, I think that could be an adequate description of it. Is that similar to your experience?
Yeah, and sometimes it can be pretty violent.
when you're in those places system has to be destroyed in order for you to pop up to the next level. And
the reason I brought that up, because as you were talking, you reminded me of an experience that I had down in the creek, going through my process of awakening and figuring out what the hell I'm supposed to do with this vision I've been given for 50 years in the future. And I'm supposed to do that. And okay, if I'm gonna do that, what do I need to confront within myself? What are the things that I'm gonna have to deal with? And because my first thought, I think, okay, if I'm gonna do this and it's successful, then all those things and the trappings that come with success, notoriety and so forth, that kind of thing. Okay, if that happened now, what would I look like? It's like it basically made me think of the things I needed to deal with now, the things I needed to deal with before I start this journey. Mm-hmm. Things aside, forgiveness of others, forgiveness of myself, taking responsibility for everything, and said that the only way I can move forward is that I need to dissolve all these things internally in order to move forward freely, unencumbered with the past.
Would you say that that's an aspect or kind of the essence of self-love to begin with, or at least the beginnings of that? There's much deeper, where we, I feel like in that place, we're capable of bridging self-actualization and self-realization. One is outside, one's inside, right? Exactly. And that's really where that dance can happen.
Yeah, it can be a dance. You can call it that. I had a dance. I guess you can say I had a dance. Reality. So I was down in the creek.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm doing my meditation. I'm sitting on a bucket, a 15-gallon bucket under a tree. There's a stream that went by, and I was doing my meditative practices. And one of them, I'm closing my eyes, and I'm reciting this, what I call the litany of the sentinels. And so it's a litany that I've made as part of a game experience to focus, so I'm creating a dragon flying superhero game, but how will these superheroes be different? And how do we demonstrate how they're different and how they walk and how they become a sentinel? So their mandates are compassion, humility, and integrity. And so I created a litany that people who want to walk the path of a sentinel, they play this game, they have to learn and recite this litany while they're balancing and doing this workout. And so I have my eyes closed and I'm balancing, I'm doing this thing. And so after I finish, and I'm, and typically I'd have an orange with me. But I still have my orange and I'm just thinking, and then I take a bite of this out of this orange. I still have my eyes closed. And I get this rush, kind of what I felt like was kind of like an ancestral memory.
Okay.
I felt like I was one of the first human that we had been on a trek that we've been starving, and we found this tree or something on the ground, and I bit into it, and just, it was like I had never tasted an orange before. Bit through its flesh, it's even through the rind and its flesh, and I'm just kind of bathed in this whole memory of like, okay, I'm you know, that I've had this connection back to what that, you know, our early ancestor, early. And so as I'm experiencing this and I'm going through it and I'm reckoning, and then I'm starting to step back away from it and be an observer and see that, okay, I'm you know, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a pretty cool experience, so forth. And then something kind of nudges my consciousness and I hear myself saying, no, I don't want to remember that. And but it all of a sudden it comes up and I get blasted off my chair. I mean, like, oh, it's like, it was like a hot rod poker got jabbed up my arse.
Okay.
It was a memory of sexual abuse that I had experienced as a young child. So, and that had never, I had, and but and I remember, you know, going, I'm writhing on the ground, and I'm physically experiencing it.
Right.
You know, I was a grown man and I'm on the ground. And so, I pick myself up and I'm crying and I'm walking up, because the creek was like about 30 meters behind our, down, you know, so you go down behind our house, about 30 meters down, there's a large 100,000 square foot area. So I'm down by the creek. And so I'm walking back up to the, to the house, and I'm crying, like I'm crying, like, and I'm like almost reliving. I'm crying, walking back to my mom. I was like, Mom, I'm just wailing and going through that. And I said, go in and go inside. And my wife's there, and she don't know what to think.
Right.
So I explained to her what was happening, so what was going on, that I had this memory and so forth. But that was such a revelation to help me understand certain things, because I had never had any memory of that. I had come later to understand that my sister had also been abused as well, so by the family relative. And so it helped connect a lot of dots for Grandpa. Sure. But also,
well, and it gave you an opportunity, having the maturity now, to experience it viscerally and examine it differently.
Yes. Yeah. And but it was so, also, like I said, liberating and freeing, and that, okay, all right, and that it revealed to be something that, okay, that it gave me something I can have control over now, because it gave me a face, it gave me an identity, it gave me something that, okay, right, okay, I can now discard any of these things that may have been related in my character, that might be related and influenced by. It's like, well, okay, all right, that happened and may have influenced my, you know, how everything that happens in our lives influences us, and which the relationships we have, our relationships with sex and everything else, that
everything we experience, everything. We have a file for.
Yes, yes.
Right? It just depends on, you know, if we call them up. Mm-hmm. Or choose to leave them there.
Or delete them. Okay. Control or, alt delete. I don't, well, did you delete that part of that experience that no longer serves you?
Exactly.
But that which informs you and said, okay, I see where that, now I see, what would I say to that young person now, that young me, you know? And so I know how I would have comforted that one. And so that informs me now and how I would move forward with that.
And in a sense, you did. Because we still,
I had to heal myself. I had to heal my little child.
Yeah, that inner child that we've got to go back and help heal and bring forward. Because if we don't, it's going to continue. You're going to drag it through life. And what it does anywhere, it does everywhere. And sometimes we're aware of it. Most of the time we're not, until that pattern, I guess, for lack of a better, appears and we see how dysfunctional it is.
Yeah. But I think also an important part of that is that we also have to do a lot of the work. We have to lay the groundwork for those type of experiences, so that when they happen, we can be open to receiving them. And so a lot of internal work and meditating, just, like I said, that litany was my, and it still to this day is my focus. I'm balancing, I say that litany and just focus me. Okay. You know, that whatever I'm doing, however I'm entering into a conversation or approaching, you know, and that's, you know, there's no reason to be stressed or, you know, it's like, this is fun. This is a, you know, we're
excruciatingly so sometimes, right?
Man, it's like, you know, we're playing this grand game of how to shape our future into one that, you know, compassion may reign in all hearts, and how that each day and every name could be a blessing, and that our efforts, you know, as grand as we may describe them and all these names given us, because I kind of thought about how can I succinctly put, you know, kind of vision into really what we want to, you know, not only experience, but also, you know, hopefully shape out have an outward expression of it. But, you know, that, you know, hopefully we've done that as well internally, is that Eden within us, you know, that we see the blessing of ourselves, that we become a blessing to ourselves in order to become a blessing to others. And we recognize that the words we've used to pummel our spirits, our own spirits, you know, that they should instead be a gift to us, a salve, that they could be a healing to us, that we can heal our own spirits with, you know, the kindness and love and forgiveness and compassion. That
absolutely. Now, that doesn't eliminate initially anyway, those disturbed feelings that come along with it. Right.
Those disquieting thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, you know, your first, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that one of the first emotions that you get in touch with is anger.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
And then you've got to, okay, where's this coming from? Why do I have it? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? Does it serve me?
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing. Yeah. And
then it's so, like, oh, no. Okay. And then it's easier to step up and say, now, okay, what did I garner from that? And what gift did it have for me to do so?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think one of the things I learned in the whole process of my IT career is, and going forward as an entrepreneur, is that, and also, you know, having attended a 10-day silent Vipassana and my practice since that, one of the things kind of taught me and kind of, you know, armored me with the ability to kind of step back, and that I don't have to be so in love with my own thinking about something, but I don't have to be defined even, you know, by my own thoughts about it. And so it's really about letting go. And, you know, how we let go, how do we create an atmosphere for creativity to blossom and flourish in that environment, that then where we see ourselves connected and as this collective on this, you know, on this planet, and how we're all visions connect together, and how we can be a part of and how we are part of a larger picture, and what that picture can actually is.
There does seem to be a holistic system in operation, right?
Yeah.
And yet it takes these kinds of experiences, as excruciatingly fun as they may be, in order for us to, you know, to be able to get to that place where we see a bigger picture, begin to ask questions of, okay, what am I really designed for? Right? That's kind of akin to, what's my mission and purpose here, right? Why am I here? Who am I, first of all? What am I? Why am I here? And what am I to do? And it would seem that following this path over time, that, and depending on how quickly you can get through it in your own self-growth, that that pattern of a perfected form, fit, and function in the world begins to arise, that seems like, oh yeah, I was just, this is what I was created for, right? Yeah. Designed for. And it happens on multiple levels, to where you're creating and serving a purpose and others in the process. So in that, how did you begin to discover what I just talked about? Because you and I have had a conversation before, and you're very astute in that observation.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe that from your perspective?
how I guess from my perspective, I call it rediscovering the path I chose in my innocence, and connecting with my inner child, which was part of that really, transcendent experience and miracle of witnessing the birth of our first grandchild, and thinking about how I have been surfing. I'm holding my arms and I'm transported through time, and I'm thinking about what my life has been and what has it been up until that moment. And I found myself wanting. And so I, wanting to do more, I wanted, I promised that I would do more and I would be more. And so for me, the best way to do that, and looking back on my career in technology and my love of games and fun and learning, it was about how can I be an active participant in my grandchildren's lives and their education, and develop applications in the games to help them discover their talents and gifts and how they fit in this overall collective, because the way I found my way through by accident into the IT field. But, what about other kids like myself and that are growing up, if only for the opportunity and exposure, and those ones who, who made that available, we could do it more. And so the idea then, how can we help expose more, and using games and play-based learning concepts to, really identify, nurture and cultivate the talents of these young people, help them find their place through their just natural abilities. I mean, like I say, because education is a birthright. From the moment we exit the womb, we're looking around, clinging on to something, sucking on something, but not knowing what we're sucking on, who we're sucking on, or why we're sucking, but knowing that's what we need to be doing. And so
it's natural, though, that we do.
Right. But, so we're looking around, we're just trying to, as we're trying to figure out where the hell we are. And who the hell is this, and who the hell we are. And that process of trying to, get guidance to find out who we are, and trying to get that from people who don't even know who they are. I mean, how do we make that process more efficient? That's what Grandpa's thinking. How do we make it more efficient? How do I identify these things in these young people earlier, like my grandchildren, like my, games that I would have wanted for myself, and how then it could add value and be a bridge of education to these concepts that could really help change an individual's life and their aspirations. We grew up hearing about, about dreaming about the mountaintop. Well, Grandpa said, hey, let's dream beyond the mountaintop. It's like, hey, the future is space, that, and as a technologist and having to follow the trends and the money where things are going, and then thinking about 50 years from the birth of my grandson, what will be going on in the 2060s? The former USSR and USA will be celebrating the centennial of our space industries and programs. And so those things will be going on in the world. And so I'm thinking about, as I hold my grandson, and I'm imagining us being that time, and I'm seeing all the celebrations. I'm thinking, okay, what about education? What about job opportunities? Will the children of Africa, or the children of the world, will they be a captive audience, or will they have the opportunity to become captains of industry and enterprises as humanity takes its next grand voyage among the stars? And so I'm like, so, okay, hey, my grandkids, heck yeah. So if Grandpa has something to say about it, yeah, we can dream big.
And well, the thing about going to the stars means you've got to have a well-oiled machine on the ground.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, all of those things, those developments, the interpersonal skills, the intellectual skills, those have to be developed to get us there.
Right. But see, and ultimately, it really wasn't about going there and building a space colony and doing all this. It's really about the journey and taking ones on a journey and having them to just imagine what kind of games and sports we could play in space. As a space tourism industry startup, we want to be the answer to that question: what kind of games and sports will humanity play in space? And so we figured that our strategy is then to use to tap in and leverage our innate creativity, but also those of all of us, the collective, and in my travels, and you talked about how did I make that connection? It was really making a connection to my own child and my love of games and seeing how I, as a 50-something-year-old grandfather now, and how could I apply my knowledge and experience in developing something that could be of value to my grandchildren, to the children of the world. And so you have it, you know, so tapping into that 9-year-old is like, okay, grandpa, let's go. Let's go have some fun. Okay. You know, okay. We're talking about, you know, building the flying circle, the hoverboard. Turns out that's the easy part. That's the easy part. People building hoverboards all over it. Yeah, all over the place. And, you know, and so they were doing that 10 years ago. And so it's not, the technology isn't the difficult part. It's the idea of, you know, what does that inform us about what it means to stand and balance. Imagine standing on a silver surface surfboard, and or standing on air, standing on water. What is our relationship with gravity? And really dive it into, okay, you know, flying like a dragon. Well, how, you know, how do we combat the physical and mental rigors of bird flight? And what does it take mentally and physically? And how do we simulate that? And so all these questions we would look to answer are really about taking a journey inside, because it's really about balance, all about balance, coming to one and balance, you know, the harmony, you know, that the dragon symbolizes, that the egg symbolizes, and that we have internally and innately, we kind of are drawn to. And so how do we foster that and do that in a way that's more easily digestible for kids growing up in inner city who mindfulness or yoga or this and that, you know, transcendental meditation, but you could help them experience that through their bodies as they would while playing basketball or football, and help them understand that this is how you achieve that on a consistent basis, and what that takes. So, yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's like you were saying, go beyond the mountain, still the top of the mountain, you can get there 1,000 different ways or infinite number of ways. And all
you don't have to build anything. We just have to be part of the payload.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and
grandpa learned how to do it.
Yeah. And there's no bozos on this bus.
So
how then, in a, maybe a more day-to-day real place, interactive person to person kinds of attitudes or engagements do you feel are more prevalent now than they were, let's say, pre-COVID? And where do you think that they're going to be in the next 2 to 5 years?
I see a trend of people reaching out and connecting. I think COVID allowed people to kind of to step back and take a breath and start to think about what's more important to them, you know, family, connection, meaning in life. And so, whereas we got the problem of being isolated and divided by, you know, polarization in media and the things we consume. But the thing that I've been seeing is, especially with the conversation I've been having with you and others, as well, is in, you know, this, you know, this collective awakening. Really, that's really kind of how Eddie always phrased it. But and seeing and starting to experience that, you know, these that I talked about how, you know, your pattern of compassionate speech, you know, perked up my ears, and that's something as I've gone through this journey and evaluate and really kind of concentrate on. How am I, you know, presenting myself, you know, to the world, and how, you know, my being online, I'm looking to figure, you know, one of the strategies I had starting out with the Rose of Education is that it'll be a documentation as part of the legacy for my grandchildren, that they'll see step by step all that grandpa has been doing, all the places he's gone, all the folks I've talked to, and the games we've conceived, they'll be able to, that's been documented from the beginning. And that one of the things I've been able to do and evaluate is how my own language has changed, and how more being that an intentional we can be intentional about how we present ourselves to the world in every aspect. But and especially if we've started inside and that we allow that to radiate out and really, if you talk about vulnerability, I don't really see it as a vulnerability, just to show who your authentic self is, but also taking the responsibility and being accountable in a sense that I know that hopefully I can leverage being a grandpa to talk about certain things in a way that is affable and easily, you know, digestible. And so I've recognized how that's changing, but also how that pattern and manner of speaking and of really focusing on compassion, looking for people who speak with compassionate words, who are authentic, and that, you know, that's what, you know, drew me to you as well, and learning about. And so, yes, I see change. I see a wave of compassion starting to build. And I think technology has its place in helping to accelerate that. And as a technologist, but also thinking first as a humanist, and what are the powers of the human spirit and how we express that in our language, mm-hmm. and how our language informs us about what we can do to dissolve a lot of the issues that we see today, especially bias in AI training sets. And so we're working on a project to, you know, an acronymic large language model in AI, you know, we're looking to build a model of the language of compassion and being able to then train an AI set on it.
And so that goes back to the question, the 2 to 5 year time frame. What is your vision with that for that period? Where do you think it might be based on where we're at now?
Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. So
there's more to that. I'm going to pause there.
So my 3 to 5 year, you know, projections are that, you know, we're in the process of getting what we call, it's called real intelligence, and it's what we call the language of compassion. We're getting that IP taken care of, protected, and so we figure 90 days after that we'll be able to start be attracting funding, and that in 3 to 5 years we will have had the acronymic database, you know, have been built with, well, hopefully at least, you know, maybe 3 billion sets of academic names and words of keywords like compassion, and this compassionate language model, which we'll be able to build. And then people will be a part, who are part
We're of talking about language truncation, right?
Yeah. And then
it's
not truncation actually. Imagine building a pyramid from the top down. So starting with the capstone of that, everything to build the rest of the pyramid is within the capstone. You unlock the pyramid, it builds itself. Everything.
So you're kind of flipping it.
And
you're,
so
you're flipping with, the pyramid almost like a servant leader model, right?
Yeah, and so the acronymic naming convention and model is really so that the first letter of your name or your name is that capstone. It contains that a programmatic instruction set for whatever you decide it want to be, your story, your business outline, you know, your whole program model, that's all contained. And so you click on that, and then everything associated kind of just unfolds and cascades down. But they're all connected through acronyms, definitions that you've given these words. And so that's so I kind of give you a lot of the kind of IP, but you know, we're working on that. On
didn't want to get you too open on that. And I appreciate
not too much. It's a lot. And so, but you know, what we're looking at is leveraging the power of the crowd and creating games for which will become a funnel for this.
Sure.
So creating
sure.
these games, and one of the things called the real names game. REAL is an acronym. It's spelled REAAL. And so it's an acronym for reciprocal expressions, acronyms, algorithms, and linguistics. And so we're asking the question, you know, people are using acronyms to define who they are, what their story is, what their experience, how they experience different words in the world.
I can see how that would fit, because we all contain particular things we think about ourselves that we don't talk to anybody else anyway. right? We have pet names or whatever, you know, when we're not having those self-deprecating thoughts anyway.
Yeah, well, we could, but see, that's the thing. You can explore those. And so take the letters of your name, turn it into an acronym. Now begin to kind of define your experience. What words describe you? You know, so make, you know, exhaustive list of all the, you know, uplifting, upbuilding words you think that you aspire to, that you are, or maybe that you felt at certain times. You know, describe your experience through the letters of your name. Then you go a different, then you go another level. The words that you've used to define or describe yourself, they become acronyms. Now define those words. How would you use to describe those words? How do they express themselves? How do you experience them? What do they do? And then do it the third level, those words, and you do it again. And so that is beginning of creating a basically an acronymic, your own unique language model. How you use words, you know, how do you put them, you know, and start really exploring your experiences and emotions that you have tied to different words, and looking at language differently, that we are we don't have to be triggered by words. Words only have the power by which we assign them. And so that we can take the meaning of words. I mean, they're letters. And so, you know, a person's words, you know, these slings and arrows, I can take those same words and they become, you know, my shield, they become blossoms. They can become things that empower me, because those words I can use to define my experience. Yeah. you can use, so the big idea that we can use words, the positive power of words, to define our experience, and through that ultimately tell that collective story of humanity, of those who've been a part of this, and make it part of an AI training set, so that we have something to say about who we am. This is who I am as a human being, and this is my experience, and these are the words that define me, and this is how us as a collective should be viewed. So trying to teach compassion to the machine. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, the interesting thing, you know, I use ChatGPT a lot recently, and my stepson, actually, the 18-year-old, said, "Hey, you got to check this out, man. This is cool." And so he told me about it a couple of times, and like, that blew him off. And I finally got into it. Wow. And this could be depending on how you query it. It seems to have emotional intelligence.
Yeah, you know, it seems like it, you know. So, I mean,
where'd that come from?
And that's what's so interesting. So that's what the exploration is about. How can we, you know, differentiate from, you know, a learned response from billions and upon billions of language models to actually, you know, some type of empathy or compassion, or, you know, outside, you know, creative thinking. Right. I need to plug my computer in. I'm going to take this in.
All right, we'll let you pick up and travel.
Yeah, no, yeah. Let me go along with you. One moment.
We'll have a nice ride here. And such a beautiful scenery. Imagine if you were there and feeling at ease. What kind of thoughts would you be having? Where would you go with them? Who would you invite along?
Let's sit back up in the sun. Sorry about that, pal. I'm going to have more battery life.
Oh, he's almost back again.
Oh, all right. All right, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Here we go. All right. Well, we had a little excursion in your backyard. Good to have you back. So where were we? Oh, I know one of the things that I wanted to go back to was the statement of vulnerability and how we understand what that is. And it, in a sense, to me, allows me to step into that unknown with less fear and a willingness to expose myself and possibly be not be enough for it. right? That those are the things that we as humans consider and then overcome through whatever coping strategies we develop to do so. Right. And or we actually gain the skill set, the confidence, and we display it authentically, which is really the purest sense of who we are. And even still, even in those places, for me, being able to be vulnerable and willing to say stuff that might not be understood in the way that I said it. And then what do you do? So in those kinds of situations, how do you find a way to resolve miscommunication?
Well, for a long time, when I first started this journey and given this vision and trying to think, you know, trying to wrap my own head around it, you know, I had a difficult time articulating it to, you know, to my then wife, and where I could, you know, and what was because, and so part of what comes up is, you know, ego, fear, and pride. And so I'm going through this process, and as I look back, I'm able to kind of take that apart and realize where, what stage I was at in certain areas. And so, whereas, you know, I mean, the work that I did for secure storage management software developer, and, you know, my wife, they didn't understand the kind of work I did that I was getting paid good money for. Mm-hmm. And so when I got laid off I wasn't in a hurry to get a job because I wasn't satisfied with having a three month nest egg. I had a 36 month cushion, and so I wanted to make sure I didn't have to be in a hurry. I saw the handwriting on the wall, and so that I allowed myself time to figure out what I wanted to do. But in that process of trying to go forward and figuring out, okay, these people that I figure respect me, that, okay, I'm explaining to them, okay, so this is the idea I have. Here's what it's based on. Here's why, because, you know, it's, you know, my job is technology innovation, and here's these games and what it's based on. And instead of getting what I thought, okay, I may not understand it all, but yeah, okay, I think you get something there. It was like my head was cut, you know, like, and that just threw me for a loop. I'm like, wait a minute. How are you guys going to tell me that? You don't know what the hell I do for my wrong job. And you're going to tell me, you're going to try to make it was my pride talk. I was like, you're going to try to tell me about my own kind of business and the kind of work that I do understand. And so,
but I had an Einstein moment, huh?
If you can't explain something
simply.
Exactly. And I couldn't. And I hadn't learned how to do that yet. And so my confidence, like, it was a shot, you know, shot to my, what I thought was my own reality.
It's understandable, you know, from your place. And when you cognate something and you have these visions and dreams and you see it all and you understand it all because you can, then that's the inner side of it, right? Then how do you put it out your mouth so that others can understand it, and we don't all consider our audiences in the process? And I don't want to, this is not a put down, but we don't dumb it down enough, right? Because we're the smart one, right? We're the genius of our own stuff. So how does that genius then talk to someone else that's not anywhere close?
I had to learn that. And so part of it, you know, as I learned, is that I should be able to explain to my grandma or to my six-year-old grandchild. And so I had to learn that. Because what it exposed is that I didn't have as good of a grasp on this as I thought. I mean, I understood it from, you know, my mind, the language that from which it was initially framed in this kind of a technological framework, and understood, you know, how these concepts, you know, related, and that I could see a path toward that. But, you know, getting to the heart of why this was important and why it would be impactful, and how I felt that it would be something of value for my grandchildren and maybe other children, and that it was part of a gift of my own talents and that I had to give back to the world. I mean, I'm responsible for, you know, for my uniqueness. You know, I'm accountable for it as well, as we all are. And so how are we developing that? How are we viewing the expression of our abilities and powers to, you know,
communicate,
the rest of humanity,
first of all, right?
Yeah, how are we communicating? And so I didn't, wasn't communicating very well. And so that kind of, my confidence kind of flagged. And, but I was, but, and I kind of had to learn to counter kind of that ego, fear, and pride with compassion, humility, and integrity. Those became really, you know, my call signs and those, my keywords for which I would, you know, what I would now march to, and that I could now view all my interactions based upon, you know, has ego, fear, pride, you know, raised its head, or, you know, how am I walking in compassion and humility and integrity in my speech, in my own thoughts, you know, internally. And I mean, it's not easy. It's just something that you just do every day. But, and for me, in order to kind of sink that in, I had to turn it into a game. And so I created a game.
Well, yeah, and do that. Life's kind of a game that way. And, yeah. And you're right. You know, this is not an easy thing to do, because you are going to confront all of those false belief systems within you and often within others.
Right.
That give you an opportunity to look at how you're converting that inner understanding into an outer expression and reflection that's at least similar to where you're speaking from. You know, and the whole active listening is really, you know, a godsend for conversations when you can practice it on a regular basis and get others to do so as well.
Right.
Because that's
right.
another thing that we, as you've mentioned, we got to have the discipline to practice those things on an ongoing basis. It's when we don't that things fall out of alignment and we begin experiencing those things that aren't necessarily too comfortable because we've fallen into that ego, fear, and pride, or whatever, you know, takes us out of that integrity of the moment.
It's about being balanced. So ultimately, it's tools, you know, that, you know, how can, you know, we achieve balance in our, you know, minds, heart, and spirits, not only with selves, but in harmony with everyone else, so that our vibrations match, you know, those, you know, vibrations of our speech and of our being, you know, they have an effect around us.
Sure.
And, you know,
words definitely have power, you know, and we cast spells. Do we want to cast good spells or bad spells, right? And,
yeah.
And do we, you know, again, how do you sense, feel, engage this desire of connection in a way that is apparent and inviting to others?
Well, I've made it part of the whole overall journey. I mean, you know, what I call the quest for the real dragon's egg. And so I created a narrative and a story about, you know, the journey. And so, and for me, it was like, okay, I have this 50-year business plan and vision. And so I have to have it outlined. And so that here are the milestones, here we're at in year, you know, coming up 13, and where we're at, where we've been. And so by creating this kind of a narrow narrative, this quest, and it really kind of lent itself to the whole thing of the dragon, the firefly, and the whole story. But being able then to see myself where I was in that story, and part of that identification of taking a character of a sentinel in the story that is here to help awaken the children of this sun, that they may take their place as sentinels at these times. And so that has been, I've been living, basically living that game, living that, you know, as living it in the sense that, you know, has been traveling around the world the past 9 years in over 20 countries. I've lived in 8 countries.
I'm just going to ask you how, what, by this magnetization that you're performing, which is essentially what you're doing, because you're elevating the playing field, literally, and that momentum that you're creating, it then does what? What's your what's the outer reflection of that? And
well, that's a great thing.
Your travels, right? That's one of those things. What else?
Yeah.
The thing
the first part of it, strategically, is that I'm creating a large playing field for my organization to work on, even as a small organization, having an international footprint and presence in all these different countries. But at the heart of it was connecting with the diverse cultures and peoples, and just saying, and seeing how they resonate with these play-based learning concepts and games. Mm-hmm. What would be revealed by their engagement with these, and being open to say, here it is, tell me what you think, and not being, it's like, part of it is thinking of it as, we're playing a game. Hey, Grandpa's got some games you want to play, I remember knocking on the gate of this leprosy colony in New Delhi back in 2014. And so first time I had never been to leprosy colony before, had read about them and studied about them in the Bible. The way I ended up there was because I had seen the Dalai Lama in Dharamshala, the Tibetan temple, speaking in Tibetan through a translator. But that was a phenomenal experience. I had then read on his Facebook page that he had visited this leprosy colony, and that he was talking about the stigma that these young children receive because of growing up, because, whole families are in there, if one parent or a cousin has it. So, so Dalai Lama was talking about that. I said, wait a minute, I'm in Delhi. So I go there a couple of days later and say, I knock on the gate. And they say, come by, and say, is this the place where the Dalai Lama was 2 days ago? And they said, oh, yes, what do you want? And I said, well, I'm a grandpa, and from the U.S., and I got some games I'm developing, and I'd like to share them with y'all. They invited me in. I got to see what leprosy looks like firsthand. I got to see the beauty. Such beauty, the beauty of their humanity and spirit. Mm. They embraced me. They didn't know who I was, but
I come felt in that in just, your pause.
I wasn't expecting to tear up on that. I was like, wait a minute, where did that come from?
But oh man, that's just as authentic as you can get. That was beautiful.
But it was beautiful how they, embraced me. And here we think we know what compassion is in the West. Mm-hmm. We think we know what it is to live with, our trials and tribulations, but to see how the dignity these individuals have, and how they express their humanity and their vulnerability. And so I loved my time there, and I look forward to going back. I visited another time prior, but so that's what these travels for me has opened up and has connected, helped me connect, is that, you just open yourself to whatever the universe brings. And say, here I am, okay, Dalai Lama, and just because it's probably, it's not like I was going out of my way. I was there in India anyway for a couple months, and
just happened to be.
I was curious. Yeah. I never, said, what was this? I'm on this journey. I wonder, hey, this is what this walk about the earth is really all about. And to take that serious. And I think what is kind of missing is that we don't give ourselves enough time to
we explore what the prevailing narrative says we shouldn't, right? Or that we ought to stay away from or avoid. It's like, that's where I found that all the stuff in the Bible never said it, beware, right? That's where you want to go look, right? I read it as be aware, right? And I never was threatened, felt fearful. I learned a lot, that curious fearlessness. And even in scripture, it says, in perfect love, there is no fear.
Mm-hmm. I love that scripture. Yeah.
So how do we, step into that? How would you, because we're kind of coming close to time, how would you take that understanding and apply it, and maybe even offer advice to some kind of daily activity that our listening audience might engage themselves in to take the next step in their own lives.
Yeah, and so thinking about that, I guess, you know, for myself, it was about loving myself, forgiving myself, you know, being able to look at myself in the mirror and say, there's nothing to be afraid of. Oh, I'm not afraid of you, or that, you know, and also giving dignity to that other aspect of my reflection and identity in the mirror, because we are a spectrum. You know, we inhabit a spectrum of identities and memories and past. And so all those things.
Oh, that's a whole other conversation.
And that's a whole other conversation. I got one. So I don't want to talk. I want to talk to you about
that. We'll get there.
Yeah. But, and so I, you know, being able, for me, being able to finally, you know, they talk about the greatest love of all. It really is the love we have ourselves for ourselves, and to really finally be able to look at myself as it's my best mate. You know, myself, I'm my best mate.
And when you see yourself there, others will too.
Yeah, and that I'm also my best competition, and that I'm never alone. All I have to do is look at my shadow, or look at my reflection in the window, and I'm like, yeah. I mean, because here's one of the things I would do. And so a thing I would do when I'm traveling, you know, and I'd be thinking like, oh man, the money hasn't come in yet. I'm kind of still struggling and stuff. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I say, where are you at? And what you see behind me, that was my background. And I'm saying, look where you're at, pal. Mm. Is this what you asked for? And I just start laughing. It's like, man, it's like you are living the dream. And so I'd say, so one of the things I would do, I would take pause, can't look at myself and say, you're doing all right. Or just remind myself, you know, think about, oh my God, everything that's happened and everything, people that we've met and the experience that I've had, and how I couldn't imagine that I'd be here. You know, when I first stepped out of the door, February 1st, you know, landed in Tanzania, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, you know, February 1st, 2014, for a 2-week exploratory trip to check this thing out. And now we're here 9+ years later and still on the road and experiencing and learning and growing. And so, but for me, you know, no matter whether your journey takes you, you know, around the world or around the block, you know, I mean, I think, we need to give ourselves credit and give ourselves honor and dignity and look at ourselves and, you know, not just say, oh, give myself a thumb up. And I'm not decrying the thoughts of affirmation, but for me it was like really deeply reflective. Like, what am I complaining about? Are you kidding me? You have the life of Riley. You know, you're walking through a few hundred meters of unpaved road, but you're 15-minute walk from the beach. You know, and just look at how you're living. Look, but it's not even that. It's about the quality of life that we have the freedom to give ourselves if we allow ourselves. And so, so look at yourself in the mirror, you know, and let yourself know that, and remind yourself, you know, how great you're doing, and that, yeah, there's miles to go before we rest, but you come a long way, baby.
Cool.
Drink big, play hard, give back, and have fun.
Oh, awesome, Anthony, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, and we will carry on further at some point, I'm sure. And so
thank you. I'm so honored, Jim, to be a part of it.
Ditto. Namaste and in lock catch. And thanks so much for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. Again, I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and I will see you next time.